Good morning. This is Long Island Morning Edition on 88.3 WLIW-FM, heard in central and western Suffolk on 96.9 FM. I'm Michael Mackey. Last night, the Long Island Railroad announced it will run its first passenger trains to its new Manhattan home, Grand Central Madison, starting tomorrow morning. Alfonso A. Castillo reports on Newsday.com that the opening of the 700,000-square-foot station, announced by MTA officials yesterday, will mark the culmination of nearly six decades of planning, as well as more than 15 years of construction of the $11.1 billion Eastside Access megaproject. The first train is scheduled to originate at Jamaica at 10:45 a.m. and run express to Grand Central Madison, where it is scheduled to arrive at 11:07 a.m. The LIRR said in a statement. Service will commence with the Grand Central Direct, a shuttle that will operate between the new station and Jamaica. Long Island Railroad officials have said trains will run every 30 minutes during middays and weekends and every 60 minutes during peak hours. Trains will operate between 6:15 a.m. and 8 p.m. on weekdays and from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. on weekends. Tickets will cost the same as those to and from Penn Station, and customers can use Penn tickets for travel to Grand Central. The shuttle service will be in place for at least 3 weeks, so customers can acquaint themselves with the new terminal as existing schedules continue, the railroad said. The railroad will have customer service ambassadors at Grand Central to help direct riders beginning Wednesday. The MTA, the LIRR's parent organization, had promised for years that the new station would open in 2022, but late last month there was an issue, and now it's open. A Patchogue, Long Island mother whose 13-year-old son died last year of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma took the first step yesterday toward a lawsuit against the South Country Central School District and Brookhaven Town, arguing the teen's death was caused by toxic air at the Bellport school he attended for 2 years. Robert Brodsky reports on Newsday.com that the notices of claim, precursors to a lawsuit, blamed the death of Javian Coleman on the district and the town for failing to shut down Frank P. Long Intermediate School for 4th and 5th graders about a mile south of the 192-acre Brookhaven landfill. Concerns about toxic emissions and odors from the landfill date back more than a decade and have been the source of numerous public meetings, lawsuits, and health studies. The district has rejected repeated efforts to close or move the school. Javian's type of cancer is linked to exposure to benzene and TCE, two chemicals that tests show have been emitted from the landfill and have been found at elevated levels inside the school, said E. Christopher Murray, an attorney representing the Coleman family. Riverhead Civil Service employees and their supporters rallied in slushy weather late yesterday afternoon to demand resolution of ongoing contract negotiations between the town and its largest employee union. Alec Lewis reports on RiverheadLocal.com that members of the Civil Service Employees Union and their supporters gathered outside the Riverhead Recreation Department office at 4 p.m. Monday, just before the union's fourth round of contract negotiations with town management were set to get underway inside the office building at Stotsky Park. Union representatives said they are asking the town of Riverhead for salary increases and other benefits that help cover the rapidly rising cost of living. The CSEA's most recent collective bargaining agreement with Riverhead Town ended December 31st. There was overwhelming support for the idea of transforming the Long Island Power Authority into a fully public power authority at a hearing conducted by the state legislature's LIPA Commission at Southampton Town Hall this past Friday. Stephen J. Coates reports on 27East.com that New York State Assemblyman Fred W. Thiel Jr. of Sag Harbor, who co-chairs the commission with Senator Keith Thomas of Nassau County, explained at the top of the hearing, which was attended by about 35 people, that when the state legislature created LIPA in 1986, it had two goals in mind. The first was for it to oversee the dismantling of the Shoreham nuclear power plant. The second was for it to become a public authority to replace the Long Island Lighting Company. Ultimately, LIPA did replace LILCO, but was never a full public power authority, Thiel said. It has always been governed by a third-party manager, from Keyspan to National Grid, and now PSEG Long Island. It's only third-party manager system in the country, Thiel said. Besides saving an estimated $70 to $80 million a year, a public power authority would be expected to provide better responses to power outages caused by major storms. It was PSEG's lackluster response when Tropical Storm Isaias hit in 2020 and about 500,000 customers lost power, and the company was criticized for its failure to communicate that the legislature decided to create a commission to study converting LIPA to a public model. The commission, which has held five hearings, will issue a draft report before holding a second series of hearings. The plan is for the commission to submit its findings to the full legislature by April. The state of New York will no longer object to a federal agency's decision to allow a Connecticut submarine builder to put dredge materials at a Long Island Sound disposal site near Fisher's Island. Jean-Paul Salamanca reports on Newsday.com that the state has withdrawn its objection to a decision from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to let General Dynamics Electric Boat use the site, one of three federally designated open water disposal sites in Long Island Sound. NOAA is a regulatory agency that conserves and manages coastal ecosystems, and the site in question is known as the Eastern Long Island Sound Disposal Site, or ELDS. Quote, while the department maintains NOAA ignored its own regulations and precedent in order to allow this disposal at ELDS to take place, the department will withdraw and retain its options to revisit these issues in the future, New York Secretary of State Robert J. Rodriguez said in a January 19th statement. In September, a federal appellate court ruled in favor of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's plan to deposit dredge materials at the site after a lower court upheld the site's selection in July 2020. A state program in which technology startups pay no taxes for 10 years if they locate on or near a college campus would be revamped under a proposal from Governor Kathy Hochul. James T. Madure reports on Newsday.com that the 10-year-old Startup NY program would be replaced by the Extended Prosperity and Innovation Campus Initiative. It would continue the offer of tax-free status to small tech firms with strong collegiate ties. But the revamped program would be open to a wider range of innovation businesses, be streamlined to remove barriers, and provide them with more effective office and laboratory space, Hochul said in her 2023 State of the State policy book. The work on the Community Housing Fund did not end with the legislation's passage on Election Day. In fact, according to New York State Assemblyman Fred W. Thiel Jr., now is the time for municipalities to truly bear down. Kitty Merrill reports on 27East.com that while meeting last week with local lawmakers and staff from East End towns and villages, plus advocates, Thiel offered an overview of the legislation, clarifying misconceptions. On the South Fork, Southampton and East Hampton town officials are both seeking candidates to appoint to a required advisory board. As with the Community Preservation Fund, which the Community Housing Fund mirrors in many ways, the advisory board will offer recommendations to their respective elected leaders. We're actively seeking members to participate, Southampton Town Housing Director Cara Box said. There's an application available on the town website. In East Hampton, Supervisor Peter Von Skoyek said his staff is putting together a list of candidates for the committee to screen. They'll play an integral role as the program gets underway, he said. Each committee must include representatives from the banking, real estate, and construction industries, plus three people from local housing advocacy or human services organizations. Approved through referendum in November 2022, the Community Housing Fund legislation enacts a 0.5% tax added to the existing 2% tax that generates revenue for the Community Preservation Fund, which is dedicated for the acquisition of open space, farmland, and historic properties, plus certain water quality protection initiatives. This has been Long Island Local News on Long Island's only NPR station, WLIW-FM. I'm Michael Mackey.